Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Womandjika, welcome and come with purpose to the Two Bays podcast. My name is Matt Sykes, and along with Claire Wild, we're back with another episode spotlighting climate champions across the Mornington Peninsula. Today, we're going to be specifically looking at the role of the education sector in climate leadership, and not just in the way that they're promoting and empowering the next generation of climate champions, but also to think about the way that they're demonstrating by example how organizations can be run with climate smart practices. Before we begin, we will take a moment to acknowledge those connections to country, and in particular, the Bunurong and Boonwurrung communities, their elders past and present, and their relationships to the bays. We'll be meeting some special guests that are going to drop in, so keep an eye out for that. And they've got a special connection to mangroves. And one of the stories that we hear some of the elders talking about are the mangroves as like the lungs of country, that breathing apparatus. And we know, speaking to Western scientists, that these mangroves are integral in managing climate and water levels, but also in sequestering carbon out of our atmosphere. They're like carbon banks. So very precious. Keep an eye out for those special guests to be able to drop in. Our two special guests today are Jane Byrne, sustainability leader at St. Joseph's Primary School in Sorrento, and also Gab Espenscheid, principal at St. Joseph's Crib Point and St. Mary's Hastings. Thanks so much, you both, for stepping out of your busy days and classrooms and the school environment to be able to sit into the Two Bays podcast with us. Gab, I'm going to pass straight to you. Really curious, as I said before we were kicking off, if I had kids, I'd be wanting to be sending them to each of your schools, because it just sounds like they're getting such a great platform there. If we think about the lifestyle on the Mornington Peninsula and the importance of that relationship to a safe climate and climate action, why? How do you see this being so interconnected?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and we are very, very close at both St. Joseph's and St. Mary's to Western Port Bay, so within walking distance. About 12 years ago, we started a little inquiry into what we knew about the bay and the level of understanding of even what a mangrove was and where the bay was really, really low. So from that point, we became passionate ambassadors and stewards of this wonderful bay, knowing that it is such an important Ramsar site and protected environment, and we would love our children to be continuing on throughout their whole life being little ambassadors and taking action. So we have lots and lots of different programs that enhance that, and also sustainable practices in our school.
That's perfect, Gab. That sets the scene beautifully, and I'll pass to Jane to perhaps respond to the same question.
Well, we're also lucky to have such a wonderful coastline down here at Sorrento. We not only have the bay, but we also have the ocean. We don't have the benefits of St. Joseph's Crib Point, where you've got beautiful wetlands and a lot of land. We only have 10% green space. The rest is hard surface at St. Joseph's. So we try to do as much as we can with supporting, you know, the biodiversity here, but we also like to go out on country and work with our students outside of school to try and support the biodiversity and land care and actions. So as a teacher of sustainability, we feel that climate action is of great importance, as adults and students need to be informed about climate action and they need to be part of the solution. So it affects everybody. And as a teacher in the Catholic education system, care for creation is part of our philosophy. And that means it's a fundamental challenge, not only morally but ethically. And these dimensions just can't be ignored. So stewardship is a responsibility that we like to impart on our students and also our teachers. And we like to communicate that back with our parents at home, because we can't change what our parents are doing at home, but we can influence how our students are thinking at school on climate change and being responsible.
Jane, I think you've touched on something really interesting, which is the way that you see your role as a school in supporting climate action across the peninsula more broadly. I might stick with you first for this next question, which is just to elaborate on that point a little bit more. So in particular, can you just tell us a little bit more about how your role as the sustainability leader came to be, and also what you see as the role of a school in supporting climate action?
So I was really lucky in that I worked in St. Joseph's for a year as a visual arts teacher, and then our principal wanted to bring into school a sustainability teacher. And I've always been a bit nerdy, so I've always, as a child, propagated plants and gardened and really had a connection with the earth and how the benefits of that can be positive on your mental health and just well-being. So at school, I've had the freedom to develop a program where our students, we have a green gang in years 3 and 4, and they're responsible for a lot of projects within the school that we fundraise for. And then we have our sustainability leaders in year 5 and 6, and we also have our DRI ambassadors, which is Dolphin Research Institute ambassadors. We try to support local in that to make an impact in working with local groups, our children can have first-hand knowledge and access to those groups. So we work with the Hooded Plover Group, where our students construct shelters for the hoodies. We work with the rangers, and we work with the Nepean Men Shed, who also help us facilitate these things. And, of course, we know that the hooded plovers are under incredible threat with climate change, erosion, and also people and predators. So they get a real understanding in working through these concepts by making, doing. They've even done their own little videos on the hoodies. And it's real for them. It's not something that's abstract that we're just teaching. They're actually doing. So the other groups that we support are the boomerang bags. So we have a boomerang bag day where the ladies make all the bags, and we give the kids an understanding of you don't have to use single-use plastics. Let's get rid of the single-use plastics and use bags that are reusable. The ladies use them from recycled materials. So we bring to the kids an understanding of we don't have the capacity with single-use plastics to deal with them, and our government doesn't have the infrastructure. So how can we solve the problem of single-use plastics? So we take that across into our nude food, where we are a plastic-free nude food school. We are also a zero food waste to landfill. We have no food waste to landfill, as we have a green cone. And last year we saved, going into landfill, 265 kilos of food waste. So we have reduced our carbon footprint. We've reduced methane, methane that's going out into the atmosphere. And we've eradicated single-use plastics within the school, although there's still that issue of single-use plastics at home. So we continually, through newsletters, try and inform our parents on better purchasing. How can you make a difference through your actions through purchasing? Because we don't want parents just emptying plastic food out of plastic containers and putting it into a nude food lunchbox. They need to be more ethical on how they're purchasing their products at the supermarket. We have a tuck shop that's run by the students, and it's a green tuck shop. So they only use paper bags and bamboo implements and paper containers. So that's totally been put into place by our students. And they also do the money managing and all those sorts of things. So we are really trying to make it local, apart from as well as global. But we take it very seriously. As I've been to St. Joseph's in Crib Point, and what they're doing there is absolutely amazing. I just wish we had more space to be able to have a greater impact. Yeah.
Gab, building on Jane's response, and firstly, Jane, thank you for sharing so much about the wonderful things that you're doing at St. Joseph's. That's very, very cool. Gab, I'd love to hear your reflections on maybe how incorporating sustainability into more of the way you work as a school has made a difference for the students.
Yes, thanks, Claire. And Jane, sounds fantastic what you're doing. We need to connect more with our fellow St. Joseph's on the peninsula. So, yeah, we have a beautiful natural environment here at St. Joe's, and we try and get our kids outside as much as we can, enjoying nature and being immersed in sustainable projects. We have a theme for all of our years. So our little preppies have a theme of making moments matter. So it's exploring and inquiring and, you know, learning all about permaculture and having a real focus on our Indigenous perspectives. The 1-2 community has a theme of living communities. So they're starting to look at our First Nations people, our communities. We connect very much a school of learning is connected. So whilst, we explicitly teach all of our curriculum, we then make sure that it's an outward-facing school that we're partnering with as many experts and people in the community as we can. So the 1-2s connect with the Bunjil Nest Project in Balnarring. So they're learning all about Bunjil and the waterways and all of the of our environment and how much of an impact we have. Then our 3-4s have a theme of the sea's our best friend. So we connect with lots of scientists and rangers and experts and learn all about the importance of the bay. The kids learn all about migratory birds and are study birds. They've made little videos which are on the website, but really the plight of why we have to have such a beautiful environment when we've got these visitors coming, these birds coming from, you know, Saudi Arabia and different places around the world. So the kids are learning really deep knowledge about the why. Why do we need to be so passionate here in Crib Point about our environment? And then that goes up to the seniors, and their theme is being of service to others. So they run the year sixes run a cafe fully operational to the public. We have a chef and a permaculturalist on our staff. The cafe uses our produce from our beautiful community garden, and the children run that cafe, learning all the principles of food science and sustainable practices in food. So we invite you, Matt and Claire, down to the cafe, and Jane, I think you have been to the cafe before, but it just is it actually builds on. So their knowledge from the little kids right through to the seniors is deepening their understanding of sustainable practices and closing the loop. We have a recycling hub. We're recycling everything that we can to close the loop on zero waste in our school and decrease our carbon footprint. So we've got the cafe, there's wetlands, we have a little nature play group now, bringing the youngest members in our community. But it's never just about St. Joe's, it's actually about bringing the community in and sharing this exciting story. We learn Indonesian, and we have a school, sister school in Lombok in Indonesia, who also have a big mangrove regeneration project. So they've been working with Hani Nusabranti from JARI, a corporation over in Indonesia, and we connect with Hani and have done for many, many years, having visits across to Indonesia and marine biologists coming out here as well. Our children recently have been connecting with Ausfisk and have been down on the Hastings foreshore actually planting mangroves. So for many years, it's been that collecting seeds. We've grown mangroves and done many science experiments here at school. And then for quite a few years, the kids would get the bus down to Lang Lang or Grantville, where they would plant mangroves, and then over the years see that and be able to speak about how the mangroves were stronger than a rock wall in saving erosion. But it changes each year with the cohort of children we have. So there is a lot of focus on student agency and voice, and making sure that our kids are active participants in this process. We have just swapped from the Resource Smart process of our being a 5-star sustainable school and are now using the Earth Care, Catholic Earth Care, with a focus on the children and what they're driving within this, so that we're reducing the amount of admin involved in any programs and making sure the kids are active participants. We have the Health Promoting Schools, who work on all of the canteen and making sure that's a really sustainable project with healthy eating. We have our Earth Care ambassadors across all the schools. So lots and lots of different activities to ensure that the kids are in the driving seat of what we're trying to achieve, and that is education, I suppose being passionate ambassadors, and just making sure that the parents are involved as well, so that the kids are educating the parents. And when our kids speak at assembly, we had our little mangrove warriors speaking at our last week's cafe, and just to hear the depth of their knowledge and understanding is just, it inspires us to take action and create a beautiful environment for our kids for many generations to come.
Brilliant. Thank you, Gab. Thank you, Jane. And this growing voice, perhaps, of the kids coming through, those students and next generation leaders, it feels like they're not future leaders. It feels like they're present leaders. And that's quite exciting, because, you know, if we talk about the future of our community leaders and our workforce, to know that they're getting such a strong grounding and the opportunities, no doubt, that they'll be seeing to create for themselves. Who knows what could be possible. But you did mention the student's voice. And I wonder, Gab, if you might be able to introduce a couple of extra guests into this conversation with us. We might have two or a couple of the mangrove warriors who are out there and taking on leadership roles already within their schools, so that they can, be examples for their fellow peers.
Gives me great pleasure to introduce Harlow and Yasmin, who were mangrove warriors last year, but are now in the grade 5 program, where they're now looking at health promoting and then moving into that cafe experience in grade 6. So I'll hand over to the girls, because they are passionate ambassadors of our bay and our Seas Our Best Friend project.
So last year we were mangrove warriors, which was an amazing experience.
We went down to Woolies Beach every fortnight
and we would learn about the migratory shorebirds and the mangroves. When we went down, one time we made an oyster reef to encourage native oysters to come back to Willie's Beach. So Willie's Beach isn't like, when you think of a beach, like sandy shores and like sort of crystal clear waters. Willie's Beach is more mud, like muddy sands, and like there is sand but more muddy, and there's lots of mangroves and you wouldn't really swim in the water because it's like murky. So at Willie's Beach we're really lucky because there's seagrass, but there isn't much, because seagrass is very important for Western Port Bay, because it has lots of, like, it has seahorses and crabs and it has lots of good things, and it's like an ecosystem. So the seagrass can feed like other animals, and then the animals that eat the seagrass, they like their food for other animals. So it's like a living ecosystem. We would go down and we would talk to the rangers and a lot of other people who lived down there, and we would talk about like what were some of the native species over there and like how the mangroves help them.
Wow, amazing, amazing girls. Your knowledge of the bays is quite incredible and so inspiring to hear the stories that you've been sharing, the experiences that you've been having. My name's Matt and this is Claire, and along with Jane, who's also on the peninsula, we've been sharing stories about different champions around the peninsula that are taking climate action. And it's so amazing to meet you, that are also part of this story as well. When your principal, Gab, was talking about the programs that you're doing, one of them really stood out. It was saying that the bay is like your best friend. What does that mean to you when you start to relate to Western Port Bay and the mangroves as like a best friend? What does that mean to you?
It's up to us, well, not us, like everyone, to look after them, the mangroves, because mangroves are the best at sucking carbon dioxide out of our atmosphere, but when they die, they produce even more carbon dioxide. So it's very important we look after them so they can do sucking up all that carbon dioxide.
I think it means to, like, if we help the bay, then it will eventually grow into something that everybody can experience, not just us.
The mangroves store all the carbon dioxide into the sand and soil. So if you dig in at Willie's Beach, there's black sand or mud.
We also find a lot of birds there,
like the orange-bellied parrot. But there's only 50 left in the wild, so we have to look after them.
And those orange-bellied parrots, they've got a special migratory pattern too, don't they? They travel, I think they're the ones that travel to and from Tasmania, is that right?
Another bird that lives down at Willie's Beach is the eastern curlew. But so they fly from America and other countries all the way to Willie's Beach. So they are the longest migratory shorebirds that fly the longest distance.
Boy, you're mindful that you might need to step back into the classroom, but so grateful that you've been able to give us some of your time because it is so precious. When you think about, your future and growing up and the kind of opportunities that you might look to create in our community, is there a particular message that you'd like to share to other adults, and maybe they've got businesses, or maybe they're parents, they're people that have a role in creating that future with you? Is there something that you'd like to say to them?
Well, I think it's really important that everything you're doing in your career is like healthy for the environment, and don't litter, because in the end it will just end up in our seas, or it would, because soon we're going to have too much rubbish and it's going to build up on the land, so there will be too much rubbish.
I think that everybody should, if they bring the rubbish to the beach, should bring it back home, not just leave it there, because also for the mangroves and for the seagrass as well.
Because in the end, when if you leave rubbish at the beach, it's going to go in the water. And lots of animals sometimes eat the plastic, or they get it stuck around their necks and they can't breathe. And if they eat it, they feel full, but they're not. So then in the end, they just die of hunger.
Yeah, we've got to look after them. They're our friends too, aren't they? Jasmine and Harlow, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. And also for giving us a little bit of an insight of some of the programs that you're doing, and no doubt your peers, the other students that you're working with. It sounds like you're having an awesome time there. So thank you so much, and have an awesome day. Once this podcast is ready, I'm sure that Gab will be able to get it out so that you can share what you've said to your parents and to your mates and all of those people out in the community. So we look forward to seeing you again. And apparently your canteen is the spot to be. So Claire and I might even come down one day and come and check it out. Well, there you go, folks. There are some incredibly articulate and inspiring and well-nurtured kids that are coming up. And as we mentioned earlier, not future leaders, they're already leading, which is quite incredible. Claire, I'm just going to pass it back to you as we keep going on this journey, but that was quite incredible to be able to spend that time with the kids.
Yeah, wow, that was brilliant to hear. Reflecting on what we've just heard from the Mangrove Warriors, I'm thinking about when I went to school, which was a few decades ago now, and unsurprisingly, what I've just heard is quite different to my own experience. And Gab and Jane, I'd really love to hear your reflections on perhaps how you've seen this concept of sustainability get incorporated into the way that our education system works over time, and perhaps any challenges that you might have encountered along the way. Gab, I might hand to you first.
It's been an amazing journey, and that's why I wanted the kids to speak, because honestly, we facilitate this, but when you hear the knowledge that these children have, and they are only out of grade four, so, you know, our grade sixes last year spoke in Melbourne and spoke all about the mangrove journey and actually won a national STEM award because they are so articulate in what they're doing. So it's about us providing and inquiring a platform for these kids. And over the years, it has grown. The groundswell is there now, and they look forward to being mangrove warriors. They look forward to being on their health promoting schools and in the cafe. And they're actually, they strive now and are motivated. And that's what I think's changed over the years, that they've got a purpose. They understand why we're doing this. And they've got skills and they've got the knowledge to actually be able to take it into action. So, I've been so excited over the journey. It's 12 or 13 years we've done the CSAP. We've been involved in that project. And the kids actually at one stage were even sitting on the Western Port Seagrass Committee. We work very, very closely now with the Biosphere Group in Hastings. And also DRI, they're often at our cafe, and we work in partnership with them. We work in partnership with the Shire and the water stewardship programs, continuously trying to create an environment actually on our school grounds that can teach our kids the whole ecosystem and process. Lots of birds, lots of doing those wildlife bio links. Right down to this year, our learning powers, our amazing deputy Sue Jackson has created learning powers that are around concepts like the parrot and all different wildlife and animals. And I'd love to share those with you sometime if you'd like to have a look. She's written a story about the kids going down to Western Port Bay. But really, groundswell, getting parents involved, making sure there's a real movement. When I first started trying to introduce sustainable practices back in 2008, I look back and say, we just didn't have the amount of people we needed to get this moving. So it's educating the teachers, it's educating the community, it's getting them to be motivated so they provide the platform to incite curiosity and build those dispositions for our kids to then grow little wings and take off and be passionate ambassadors.
Oh, Gab, that's really important, I think, that comment that you made, what the examples that you gave of the role that partnerships have played in growing this. Maybe for a comparison, I'll provide an anecdote from my childhood, which was when I was at primary school. We had one teacher who decided that it would be really nice to repurpose this area that used to be a playground into an area of native bush. And there's all this brilliant intent behind it. And then that one teacher got a job at a different school, moved away. I was back in my hometown in Ōtautahi, Christchurch in Aotearoa, New Zealand recently, which is where the school was. And the area is a lot smaller now, and it's just not the same. And you think there was that vision, but because it was only held by this one person, it didn't really stick. And so I think all those examples that you gave of the different types of organizations that you're partnering with and getting them involved in different ways, I think is really powerful and shows how you can create much more significant and lasting change by working together with other people and organizations who share your aspirations. So that's really cool. Jane, I'd love to turn to you now and hear your reflections on incorporating sustainability into the way that you work.
Okay, so this is the seventh year that we've had sustainability as a subject at school, and it also has been a journey, and one that we've made connections with community groups, with the Mornington Peninsula Shire. Being a resource smart school has led us into becoming more aware of our school surroundings. We've attained 3 stars. Our biodiversity star, core, and our waste. And the 2 that are left are energy and water, which will be the most challenging as we have a very old school building. Part of our journey has been participating in programs. So the Birds in Schools program that the Mornington Peninsula Shire runs has been fantastic, because a part of that program means the students can go out and do audits, and they can look at our school environment, and things from those audits can be identified. And they identify issues such as, well, we don't have a water source for our birds, or we don't have smaller birds coming into the school grounds. How can we create more habitat for smaller birds? And so they looked at this with Cam Walls, who's one of the Shire officers, and they identified that we needed to plant some smaller plants and plants that would create a food source for those birds to be attracted to come into school. We were really lucky with a climate action grant in 2022 where we were able to facilitate the Briars Nursery coming into school and teaching our children how to propagate and germinate seeds. That then led to us planting with 3 local environmental groups, rangers at Point Nepean National Park, and Nepean Conservation Group, and also Friends of Rye Foreshore. So within our school and in the wider community, we've planted over 2,000 plants, and those have been mostly propagated by students. So they have a sense of nurturing, growing, going out on country and having an understanding that from the year before, some of those plants didn't survive due to climate and weather conditions, whether they were planted a little bit too late and they didn't get enough rain, or we weren't timely enough in putting those in. So what's generated from this is an understanding from community that we are trying to be a green school. And this year we've been invited to be a part of People in Parks project, which is Save the Moona Woodlands. Now, since white settlement and property development and climate change and agriculture, we only have left on the Mornington Peninsula 7% of our original Moona woodland. So our students at the moment are learning about what is a Moona woodland, what is the community of plants. It's obviously an ecosystem, not just of Moonas, but a variety of other plants, insects, vertebrates and invertebrates. And they're going to be looking at that in depth and also propagating more specific plants that will grow in that Moona Woodlands community. So people and parks are also of the philosophy that you need to nature dose. So you need to go out into the environment and get your fill of the natural world for well-being. And we all know that our students have come back from COVID and we have some very anxious students. We also have climate change that is creating anxiety with what our students are seeing on the TV and media. So they can have a positive impact on their own environment that they live in on the peninsula by undertaking some of these programs and working through it in class as well. So we're hoping to reduce our impact even further by one of the easiest ways of reducing carbon emissions is by planting trees, plants. And I think our students are always quite surprised when they learn that 70% of our oxygen or over 70% of our oxygen comes from water. They always have this fundamental understanding that it's trees. Apart from trees and vegetation being important, our water sources are also important and we need to take care of those. So our DRI is fabulous at that. You know, when they have their first swim with dolphin research down, swimming with the dolphins and seals, they always come back and they tell us, students at assemblies, what they've encountered and what they've learned. And then they take their ideas down to the Sorrento Kindy where they impart their knowledge on the students down there. So we have a kids teach kids sort of program philosophy as well happening there. So we're really lucky that we're evolving and we hope to continue to evolve. And we're trying to build on our 10% green space, and we're also looking broader afield within the community to work with our community stakeholders as well.
Thank you, Jane. It's brilliant to get this such a rich picture of how all of these things are coming together. And as we start to move towards a close, perhaps I can ask you a question, Gab, and Claire will follow up with Jane on one last question. But Gab, one of the things that jumps out here is that, you know, your school is being able to demonstrate leadership, not just for your organisation, but to a whole community, and the ripple effects that have no doubt go beyond, you know, the time that the kids are in school and the geography of our region. I'm just wondering if you were speaking to another principal in another place and they haven't had that opportunity to start their own climate journeys within their organisations and school, what would be one tip on helping them get started?
I would say don't try to copy what others have done, but look at your local context and get the passion happening from the ground. In every environment, there'll be some little, you know, animal that's endangered or some plight. So I think it's actually a campaign it needs to be to start with, to get the kids motivated and to really have a purpose. So I would also say never. We started off really small and we still just are developing every year. What else can we do? It's never a finished product. It is a way of living and a way of being for our kids. And so we've got our eyes wide open saying, what else can we do to take action? So for other principals, it's really don't be frightened to start because you don't know where you'll end. So it's just that, you know, get on the journey and be led by the kids and by the community and by the climate change action that's happening out in the community as well, globally and locally, so that the kids can see the bigger picture. I think it's really exciting, and Jane, it was great to hear the kid that you mentioned, that kids teaching kids and kinders. So this year, I've been at St. Joe's for a long time, so been principal for 17 years, and then I moved over to St. Mary's as well about 4 years ago. And it's been wonderful to see that we're slowly telling this story and spreading the message. So our St. Joe's kids were collaborating with Ausfish last week, and then we invited the new Mangrove Warriors from St. Mary's so that they could go over and watch the St. Joe's kids and to join in and start to learn as well. So just it's got to build from the ground, but it's different in every school. So, you know, we've got our cafe here. I would never go and just copy that cafe over at St. Mary's. We need to build that ourselves. So we also have three kinders that are coming to the C's Our Best Friend in the start of second term, where our kids will teach the little kinder kids as well. So just getting the message out there.
I know that our listeners can't see because it's a podcast, but there was a lot of nodding going on, Gab, amongst all of us here when you were speaking about, firstly, not just copying what other people are doing, but really understanding your local context and taking action that relates to that. And secondly, which I think is something that has come up with pretty much all of the guests that we've had on the Two Bays podcast, which is about doing something. And even if it's a tiny step towards sustainability or regeneration, then that's something that is incredibly important. And it's not about being perfect from the very beginning, but just about making progress. So with that in mind, Jane, I'd love to hand to you and hear if you have any pieces of advice to add to what Gab has just shared.
Well, it's definitely a journey. And I think the more connections you can make with community, the more your program grows and the nurturing of students with their understandings of how something actually grows is that you have to care for it and tend to it and water it. We have some wonderful intergenerational activity going on with our Men's Shed and our St. Mary's Parish who come over, and hopefully we can reinstate that because COVID sort of really crushed it a little bit. But community is really important, and if we can have our students spreading the word on how to care for our environment and our planet and take that home and express that to the parents, it spreads. It's contagious. It's a wonderful thing to be able to get your hands in the dirt and get them dirty and plant trees and watch them grow. So nurturing and imparting knowledge, we have a very privileged job in working with children, particularly when they're younger, because I think they actually harness it and really embrace it, and they're our future politicians, and we want that to be nurtured and to grow.
It takes a village. That's one of the key themes that seems to be really coming through here, where in this conversation we've got a really passionate principal, we've got an incredible sustainability leader inside an organization, we've just spoken to two kids that as you say, Jane, you know, they're future politicians, they're future leaders. You know, in Regeneration Project Story, it was actually through an introduction facilitated by the Thin Green Line Foundation that works with rangers in different parts of the world, where I had the opportunity to meet Jane Goodall, who some might know through her work with chimpanzees, and she's kind of like the female David Attenborough. There's been others. There's been people like Lorna Davis, the former Global B Corp ambassador, or Thais Corral, who is based in just outside of Rio and is now the co-chair of the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. When we just had those brief moments with Jasmine and Harlow there, you just thought to yourself, gee, I wonder who I'm speaking to here, you know. And the opportunity for that ecological knowledge and literacy to be embedded in their lives, and no matter what they do, whichever pathway they follow, and what that means for our community as a whole, it's quite brilliant to see. The other dimension here that was really clear is the role of religion and in spiritual tradition and practice in nurturing this awareness of stewardship. And we heard that from both within your school environments, but we also heard that First Nations connection to country and that culture. The kids were, you know, the way that they were relating, there was that sense of reciprocity, and it really shows us those secular values, regardless of which traditions we might be connected to or those belief systems, there's something fundamentally spiritual and common to humanity that allows us to take on that custodianship role and stewardship role. I'm a little bit speechless at the moment because, to be honest, it just makes me feel like for regeneration projects, we'd love to do more work with schools, the junior schools and also the senior schools, because we understand the more that we see in the work environment and leaders how critical this next generation are in coming up through the system, not just for ourselves, but for the planet. So on that note, Gab, Jane, thank you so much for sharing your experiences at St. Joseph's Crib Point, St. Mary's Hastings, and also St. Joseph's in Sorrento. Your stories as a principal, as a teacher, as people, just leaders within our community are deeply inspiring. On behalf of Claire and I, this has been another episode on the Two Bays podcast, the journey around in this series, the Mornington Peninsula, visiting climate champions. Over and out. How amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions? Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favorite channel. Then visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.